Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sunday afternoon advanced sutra class. I have to be short and sharp today. I have to leave on the dot at 4 o'clock to pick up Tanchalat. He arrives today at the airport. So I hope I manage to do it in time. Usually I picked sutra number 19 and 20 because they are my favorite ones, and they are my favorite ones because they're very practical. They really give you something to do. So the problem is basically because I have not so much time today. Instead of doing them both together, I just read out a little bit of sutra number 19, the two kinds of sword, something which I find really important, which is for me something of the essence of the Buddhist teaching, and which also illuminates basically whether, how and why the Buddhist path works and in which direction it's going to go. So the two kinds of sword, number 19 of the Majjhima Nikaya. That's basically, like always, as have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jeta's Grove, Anantapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus as, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, it occurred to me, suppose that I divide my swords in two classes. Then I set on one side swords of sensual desire, swords of ill will, and swords of cruelty. And I set on the other side swords of renunciation, swords of non-ill will, and swords of non-cruelty. As I abided thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a sort of sensual desire arose in me. I understood thus, this sort of sensual desire has arisen in me. This leads to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the affliction of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. When I considered, this leads to my own affliction, it subsided in me. When I considered, this leads to others' affliction, it subsided in me. When I considered, this leads to the affliction of both, it subsided in me. When I considered, this obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana, it subsided in me. Whenever a sort of sensual desire arose in me, I abandoned it, removed it, did away with it. As I abided thus diligent, ardent, and resolute, a sort of ill will arose in me, a sort of cruelty arose in me. I understood thus, this sort of cruelty has arisen in me. This leads to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the affliction of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. And then the thought subsided in him by reflecting thus. And basically does that with all three kinds of thoughts. And then this is basically one of the essential sayings now from the Buddha, as far as I perceive my personal practice. Bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu, which is a he is always addressing the bhikkhus, like, you know, because he's talking to the bhikkhus, but that also applies to practicing lay people. Bhikkhus, whatever bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of his mind. And that is a very, very essential saying of the Buddha. What people cannot think about that often enough, because that's basically how the whole thought structure and how the whole inner desire or tendency structure changes slowly over the years by what our mind is inclined to. So if we cultivate these sorts of cruelty, the sorts of ill will and the sorts of sensual desires, if we don't put a stop sign to them, that's basically how our tendencies develop into a more unwholesome direction. Getting darker and darker and darker, basically, what we call reality, which is in reality just perception, personal reality. So I just repeat that sentence one more time. Bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of his mind. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of sensual desire, he has abandoned the thought of renunciation to cultivate the thought of sensual desire. And then his mind inclines to thoughts of sensual desire. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of ill will, upon thoughts of cruelty, he has abandoned the thoughts of non-cruelty to cultivate the thoughts of cruelty, and then his mind inclines to thoughts of cruelty. What he does then, basically, I find that very beautiful, because it has something very non-judgmental to it. He's basically just dividing his mind into two kinds. He doesn't say, oh, I'm the bad guy, I'm thinking that and that sort of stuff. It's basically like a scientist. It's like, what kind of thoughts are coming up? And just being aware, oh, thoughts of cruelty, thoughts of ill will. And then just reflecting, oh, is that leading to my own affliction? Thoughts of leading to others' affliction? Leading to my own and other people's affliction? Well, yeah, right, that's the case. And just by thinking thus, basically, the mind inclined by its very nature away from that sort of thoughts. And now, important, I find in that sutra as well, that after he practiced like that for a while, he found out that he just had to, he gives a nice simile to that, maybe you can read that by yourself another time, because I don't have time for that today, that after a while it was for him that, like, he just had to look upon the upon his thoughts, and there was no danger in that direction anymore, because the mind was inclined, because he trained it for a while, that these sorts of cruelty and sensual desire and sorts of ill will, they didn't come up anymore. So he could just abide with the positive kind of this kind of thoughts. But even that, he reflected, if I keep on thinking like that, my body still will wear out. I still get tired. And when I get tired, then these unwholesome thoughts, they will arise again in me. And so, after a while, he tried to still even that sort of, this kind of thoughts. And then basically he got into really nice and deep meditation, which led eventually to his enlightenment. So now the sutta number 20, the removal of distracting thoughts. And here basically the Buddha gives very, very concrete advice how to deal with this sort of thoughts. And you can really see that in a sort of sequence, where, for example, the Eightfold Path, it always starts with right view, but basically it's also basically that all the other factors of the Eightfold Path encourage the preliminary factors again, and so it's an upleading spiral. While in this sutta here, basically, you can really see this sort of sequence he uses as the first means to deal with sorts of sensual desire, ill will, and cruelty, and then basically other measures when the first measure doesn't work out. So, once again, the Buddha is at Savatthi, and he addresses the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhu, when a bhikkhu is pursuing the higher mind, from time to time he should give attention to five signs. What are the five? Here, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is giving attention to some sign, and owing to that sign there arises in him evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion. So basically, he has hate and delusion here, which is very close to ill will and cruelty. Then he should give attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome. When he gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, then any evil, unwholesome thought connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. With the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. Just as a skilled carpenter or his apprentice might knock out, remove and extract a coarse peg by means of a fine one, so too, when a bhikkhu gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. So why is that the first means? What is the Buddha doing here? It's basically first that awareness there that some sort of unwholesome thought has arisen in the mind. So very wholesome thing to condition the mind in a different direction is thinking exactly the opposite kind of thought, if that is possible in that situation. Because if we cultivate that positive kind of thought, that's basically when the positive inclinations of the mind get stronger, which is leading away from our own affliction and other people's affliction, and affliction of both. Yeah? Please do so. That's right. That would be a sort of ill will or cruelty, you could call that, for example. I think we will still, we will come to that actually, because like you said, like a diligent carpenter using the peg, this is basically one of the more refined pegs. You won't be able to do that in a situation where strong ill will or anger or anything has come up already, where you really strongly ponder upon that sort of thought. And that's basically, we will see now basically how he's, giving different advices for a different, intensity of coarse mind states, right? So basically, I just continue for a while, and then if it doesn't become clear, we come back to that, yeah? So, where was I? Oh, sorry. Pages flipped back. Okay. If while he's giving attention to some, that should be the second one, yeah. When he gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, then any evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. That's what I call the more finer peg. Now, the second measure, basically, to deal with the mind, if while he's giving attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, there still arises in him evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then he should examine the danger in those thoughts thus. These thoughts are unwholesome, they are reprehensible, they result in suffering. When he examines the danger in those thoughts, then any evil, unwholesome thought connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. With the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. Just as a man or a woman, young, useful, and fond of ornaments, would be horrified, humiliated, disgusted, if the carcass of a snake or a dog or a human being were hung around his or her neck. So too, when a bhikkhu examines the danger in those thoughts, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. you see basically you need a basic kind of mindfulness already to even see what sort of mind state you are in here. And if you tried the first method basically of trying just to replace that unwholesome sort of thoughts with something more wholesome and it doesn't work out, then basically the next thing to contemplate is the danger in this sort of thinking. Where is that leading me to? Where is that leading other people to? Is that really to my benefit? But even that sort of thing basically needs still a bit of distance to that whole process. That's basically the first two contemplations. They're more for moments when the mind is not absolutely agitated and in some really unwholesome state already. That's something you can do for your meditation, basically, when you have a bit more peace and quiet already, that you practice to cultivate the wholesome kind of thinking, that you have it at hand when you come into situations where it's getting more difficult. And now the third one, basically, is if he is examining the danger in those thoughts, there still arise in him evil, unwholesome thought connected with desire, with hate and with delusion, then he should try to forget those thoughts and should not give attention to them. When he tries to forget those thoughts and does not give attention to them, then any evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. With the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated, just as a man with good eyes who did not want to see forms that had come within range of sight would either shut his eyes or look away, so too, when a bhikkhu tries to forget those thoughts and does not give attention to them, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. It can refer to really when you sit down in an agitated sort of mind state already, but basically what he's just saying here, if that sort of mind state comes up when you try to sit down and you use the first two skillful means to get rid of it, then what he's basically saying here, distract yourself, do something else. Even if you switch on the television or listen to some wholesome music as a lay person or whatever, it's absolutely legitimate to go out and look at the sun or whatever. go in the bush, have a bush walk. Don't dwell on this sort of thought, because if you dwell on them, you make them stronger. If you give affirmative thoughts to that sort of negativity, this negativity increases your tendencies of negativity. So here he is basically telling you it's absolutely legitimate in certain mind state to just do something which you like. Ajahn Brahm would say, have a nice cup of tea. Okay. So, and that didn't work out as well. If while he is trying to forget those thoughts and he is not giving attention to them, there still arise in him evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate and with delusion, then he should give attention to stilling the thought formation of those thoughts. When he gives attention to the stilling of the thought formation of those thoughts, then any evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. With the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. Just as a man walking fast might consider, why am I walking fast? What if I walk slowly? And he would walk slowly, then he might consider, why am I walking slowly? What if I stand? And he would stand. Then he might consider, why am I standing? What if I sit? And he would sit. Then he might consider, why am I sitting? What if I lie down? And he would lie down. By doing so, he would substitute for each grosser posture one that was subtler. So too, when a bhikkhu gives attention to stilling the sword formation of those sword, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness, and concentrated. So, the fourth one basically is what he's doing. He's going to the very source of the origin of that track of thoughts which leads to all the unwholesome thoughts which were coming up in the mind. This method, actually, I found myself very, very difficult, because if you're in an agitated mind already, it's sometimes you can feel the mind doesn't really want to let go of that. If you're angry, for example, with somebody, I find, at least myself, there's something in the mind which wants to convince itself, basically, that that anger is justified. So to go, you need an incredible amount of mindfulness in that situation, basically, to really think, what was going on here? Where is that coming from, that anger? What was the first cause of that anger? Because the simile is quite nice with running and standing and sitting, because basically when you're in that mindset, you really, if you meditate a bit before, you know it really feels like running. The mind is just, and he did that, and blah, blah, blah. And it feels so right, basically, this whole construct of the mind, that that method needs some skill. So basically, that's one method I found very, very difficult to use, and usually I, for myself, if I really get into a negative mindset, I try to, if it happened already, I try the distracting, or try to distract myself with something which is more wholesome, basically. That helps much more for me, instead of dwelling on the unwholesome. And then basically, now we have the absolute last measure. That means before you punch somebody on the nose, if while he is giving attention to stilling the thought formation of those thoughts, there still arise in him evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he should beat down, constrain, and crush mind with mind. When with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he beats down, constrains, and crushes mind with mind, then any evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. With the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness, and concentrated. Just as a strong man might size a weaker man by the head or shoulders and beat him down, constrain him, and crush him, so too, when, with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, a bhikkhu beats down, constrains, and crushes mind with mind, his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness, and concentrated. Bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is giving attention to some sign, I just say a few words to that one. That's the last measure, absolute last measure. That's really before you lose it and produce some negative karma for yourself by doing something which you have to regret afterwards. Every other thing failed, and it's just basically this, when you get the advice of people, just step back and count to 10 or whatnot, you know. When you're full of rage already, absolute last measure, and only advisable as something to prevent you from doing something really unskillful and unwholesome. It's really good to use all the other methods before, but sometimes it just isn't present, because anger can still arise very quick in us. So, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is giving attention to some sign, and owing to that sign there arise in him evil, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then when he gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, so that is the first measure again, basically, to replace the evil thoughts with some nice thoughts, something kind and wholesome. Any such evil, unwholesome thoughts are abandoned in him and subside, and with the abandoning of them his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. When he examines the danger in those thoughts, so basically, usually in the sutras, everything is repeated. He would go through the whole sequence again, but here in the Majjhima version, they shorten that. So basically, when he tries to forget those thoughts and does not give attention to them, when he examines the danger in those thoughts, as the second measure, when he tries to forget those thoughts and does not give attention to them, that is what I call the distracting advice. When he gives attention to stilling the thought formation of those thoughts, which I find very difficult myself actually, but you might be more skillful with it, going to the root and trying to, by examining the roots basically, to see how silly the whole thing is. When with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he beats down, constrains, and crushes mind with mind, any such evil, unwholesome thoughts are abandoned in him, and his mind becomes steadied, internally quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. This bhikkhu is then called a master of the causes of thought. He will think whatever thought he wishes to think, and he will not think any thoughts that he does not wish to think. He has a severed craving, flung off the fetters, and with the complete penetration of conceit, he has made an end of suffering. So that basically can lead to the highest goal, that sort of practice. That's what he just said here. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So, these two sutras in connection, I find a very, very practical method to deal with your day-to-day life. And definitely, if you want to cultivate something like that, you can put that exactly in your meditation. But as a lay practitioner, basically for a bhikkhu it should be all sorts of sensual desires, because in the monastery you have the possibility to practice a bit more, well, how you want to call it, to give a bit more power to that sort of thing. In the world, the Buddha would advise you basically, if any thought against your five precepts comes up in your mind, you could say, any sort of, well, extreme case, to kill somebody, or to lie to somebody, stealing, or to sexual misconduct, or deluding your mind with drugs or whatever. If this sort of thought come up, basically, to the first measure, to replace them with something more wholesome, whichever that might be for you. Some people are more inclined, as a faith character, doing some devotional thing. They might love to think about, I'm basically not such a devotional character, so it's always hard for me to imagine what these people do. They do a lot of puja and whatnot, basically. You know, they really can be quite uplifting for them to develop more wholesome thoughts, or maybe just reflecting what sort of things the Buddha did, which can incline the mind into a nice direction. Well, and then the second measure, you need this degree of mindfulness, basically, to see what is going on in my mind. If you have a totally polluted mind, then basically you won't even be aware to distinguish what's going on. Usually, as somebody in the world, they don't even have the measure to see basically what is wholesome or unwholesome. Basically, at first you get an idea what's basically wholesome and unwholesome, and it's so simple. It's basically whatever is wholesome for myself and for other people. What doesn't lead to their affliction and not not to my affliction and not to the affliction of foes, that is what can be called wholesome. It's a very simple thing in itself. And you have always your five precepts as a measurement. But, yeah? Yeah, a certain degree you need, you know, that's why the Eightfold Path starts with right view. If you don't have any basic right view, then whatever comes along, you go along with, basically. That's usually what happened to a lot of people in the world, that they don't have any standard or any sort of person or whatever they can look up to. So that's basically when you're pretty lost and then you run into difficulties and you just don't know why. Because you just don't know how the mind works and how your actions relate with the world and in what way that affects your karma vipaka, the resulting consequences of your actions. So sure, you need a bit of right view basically and a bit of mindfulness to see what is going on in the mind. But that doesn't need to be perfect in the beginning. You know, you start somewhere. Just sit down and have a look. What's going on in my mind? But I find it so beautiful because it's so non-judgmental, you know. Even if you did a lot of stupid things in your life or whatnot, and so you have still a lot of unwholesome thoughts coming up, it's basically just like, yeah, it's not, they are my unwholesome thoughts, I'm this evil person. The Buddha is basically makes this distance, you know, that is thoughts, unwholesome thoughts. If I just let them continue, babble, 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 I know this will lead to my own affliction. Because if you know a little bit of how you increase the tendencies of the citta of the mind, then basically you know that is what advertising is for example. It presents something to you and puts it in a very favorite light. Like whatever they want to sell, toothpaste or whatnot. You don't just see the toothpaste. You have the happy family and somebody with impeccable white teeth. And you have all these images connected to that product they want to sell to you. That is basically because they're clever. They know how the mind works. If you have these sort of associations with that product, basically, You associate all the other things which might come up in your day-to-day life, see somebody with white teeth or whatever, and you think of that stupid toothpaste. Or, if it doesn't do that, basically, you think that, well, what usually advertisement, that was quite interesting. I heard somebody in this advertisement industry saying it's not that, I mean, advertisement, they cannot convince you, basically, if you don't have a driving license, and you don't want to have a car, they cannot convince you to have a car. But basically, whatever advertisement convinces you is that there always can be something from the outside which eases your dissatisfaction. So basically, there's always something you can get from out there which will still your inner hunger. And that's what advertisement is really good for. And Even to see that, you need a certain degree of mindfulness. But if you see that you can use these positive images as well to develop your mind in a wholesome direction, then you might get really skillful by bringing up really good stuff inside of your mind to replace this sort of unwholesome thought that might arise. And so you have a measurement, not to judge yourself, but to you get an initiative, and also you can develop skillful means to develop your mind in a certain direction. Does that answer your question, actually, in a way? Yeah. So yeah, as a lay person, basically, I would replace in that sutra always when he talks of social sorts of sensuality, sorts of ill will. and thoughts of cruelty, I would just substitute the thoughts of sensuality with thoughts which go against the five precepts. If any thoughts in your meditation against the five precepts come up, look very closely. Is that leading to my own affliction? Is that leading to other people's affliction? Is that leading to my own and other people's affliction? And if you see that, then basically the mind, just by its very nature, doesn't want to be afflicted. It's just that the mind can often be very, very blind. But if you see that, if the mind sees it, just by its very nature, these thoughts subside. But you need practice of it. I'm trying that for many years, and sometimes you still think you haven't even started. You know, you still get angry with somebody in the monastery. You live with many, many people there. And you live with many people you would never live with in the world. Basically, you don't decide, I want to live with him. That's just basically they come, and they have. You can appreciate basically that they have good intention to develop their mind, but they bring all their burden from the world they bring with them in the monastery. And it's in a way, it's really beautiful that the community at Bolognana can keep that degree of harmony inside of itself. And that's because of Ajahn Bam's personality, because he is so unjudgmental, doesn't take sides, and he's just giving a very good example of exactly practicing this sort kind of thoughts. He just doesn't judge you. And that's basically why makes it so easy for myself, actually, not to judge Ajahn Bam as well, when he does something which you don't like so much, actually. So, but it's a process, and it takes time to develop that. And so I cannot repeat that often enough, basically, to remind myself of that. Because we forget, basically, we have all the old conditioning still working in our mind. And basically that whatever we have learned throughout our whole life, basically that is there already. And if you believe in that, maybe many lifetimes before. So that is a process basically which takes a long time to dismantle. And in your meditation, what you can do, if you're not so agitated, to use the first and especially the first method. If anything comes up, which is maybe a lot of Westerners have ill will towards themselves, something comes up with pain in the body or whatnot, or you want to steal your thought formation, it's just like babbling on and on and on, and then you just get judgmental of that, just, oh, cannot shut up, it's just hopeless with me. Something's going wrong in the body again, basically. The whole meditation gets just tense the mind just gets really negative. And if you're skillful, if you can manage at that point, basically use some wholesome thoughts, do some loving kindness thoughts, whatever you find helpful for yourself. You have to know your own character a little bit as well, what works for you. We're not all the same. And basically by replacing the sort of unwholesome thoughts, the mind gets a little bit more inclined towards positive thoughts, same as it does with advertising. A little bit more advertising, and you believe a little bit more, basically, that there's something out there which is going to make you happy, gives you lasting happiness. But, yeah, little by little. And it's for me, it stresses that a lot, actually, that it's not, for me, it's a very scientific method. Let's see. And if you practice it for a while, you will see some progress in your practice. Sometimes you still think you're at the beginning, but just the way, for example, I don't take that stuff usually to my hut anymore if some conflict arises in the monastery. I can let go of that much quicker than before. Don't dwell on that so much anymore. Or if really it gets negative, then basically I distract myself. I don't have my cup of tea or whatnot. It's terrible. You have a nap or whatever. Just it's not good to punish yourself and dwell on this negativity. That is not what the Buddha encourages, and it's not leading to anything good. So, are there any questions? No, I definitely think he is using that physical simile to because it feels so much like that in the mind. The mind feels like running, just like. Yeah, it's running. It's for me, it's an excellent simile for that. And basically, people who really get mentally disturbed, basically, when they have a breakdown, what they do is they run. Or they jump into their car and they drive. We had that actually in the monastery. Somebody's going nuts. Basically, they run. Just don't care. They walk out of the monastery and go on and on and on and on and on and on. And then you might find them somewhere in, I think in Manejong, he showed up. Just by chance, actually, we found him actually in Manejong. Ajahn Brahm was going to Noramara or whatever. Running, yeah, it's excellent simile. That's exactly what you're going to do when the mind really goes mad, then you will run. If you have that busy of mindfulness and not such strong tendencies which really make you run, then you might say, whoa, man, that's an unpleasant mind state. Why am I doing that, actually? Standing would be nicer, actually. It's so exhausting to run so much. And then when you calm down a little bit more, it's just like, yeah, standing is, it's better, but why don't I sit down? And it's also a simile of just the mind settles down a bit more, it's getting a bit more comfortable. And then the mind settles down maybe even a bit more, and you think, oh yeah, why not lie down, you know, really relax, and take some deep breaths. And that's when the mind really gets comfortable, and you're really in your bed, and nice and warm, and you just sit up. Ajahn Pleyan said, when you reach that room from this hot, stinky weather in Thailand, basically, and the mosquitoes are bothering you, and then you come into that room with this nice mat and air condition is on, and nothing is bothering you. It's just like, oh, and you feel so at home. And that's basically when you lie down. It's not that sort of sleepiness implied, basically, just that feeling of comfort in the mind. And the more agitated you were in the beginning, the more you might appreciate basically how nice it is to settle down from that mind state again. And if you have some skillful means basically to do that. He gives very drastic similes basically, the sorts of ill will basically with a carcass around your neck, with a rotten snake or whatever, human being, whatnot. If you just imagine that, basically seeing any sorts of, oh, what an idiot that is, or whatnot, basically, in that moment you see and smell a carcass of a rotting snake around your neck. That's basically how the Buddha gives a skillful means for that sort of mind state. We don't, basically, we're usually quite coarse. We don't these things, yeah, we're Christians, maybe we think there's righteous anger and all that stuff, but basically, for the Buddha says this is a mental affliction, this is a disease, basically, which is coming up. In the same way you can see it as a disease, as a carcass, if you have that sort of, if you like that sort of similes, basically, some people, they find that incredibly helpful, yeah, they have a very visual mind. And it's something in on the outside again, you know, the carcass, you know. It's not that you're the carcass, but somebody is trying to put that around your neck. And so you just try to get rid of it, basically. So it doesn't have this punishment or judgmental character again. It's basically just something which is unpleasant, which you would never bother, basically, to put around your neck voluntarily, that carcass. It's just sometimes we cannot see basically what we are doing to our own minds. Any more questions? Yeah, that's basically for myself, if you know a little bit about the sutras, for example, what I use sometimes is I find that story very moving. For example, when the Buddha got enlightened and afterwards he was looking for his 5 disciples, and they were trying to get rid of him, and he was trying to convince them, hey folks, I found the way out. I mean, these guys were struggling extremely, you know, extremely hard practice, that Hindu practice, and really tormenting your body and really unpleasant stuff. And then somebody comes around basically and says, man, I found the way out. And you don't have to punish yourself. I found the middle way. And that's sometimes actually when I got I had a really nice meditation afterwards, and just tears coming up and whatnot, you know. And I also had to get a bit skillful with it. Also, sorts of gratitude, for example. I remember that I thought about my granny when my granny died, you know. And just, yeah, nice lady, and what on, you start very simple, and what did she do, basically. And I went there once a week, actually, and got some packet of beer for my granddad, basically. This heavy sort of bottle bag. And then granny spoiled me, basically. She just cooked for me. And I was just after the meal, I was lying in that chair, basically, where this feet rest comes out. And I just rested there very comfortably for an hour. And then basically talked a little bit and went home. And then what really struck me then with granny was she never judged me, actually. She was incredibly unjudgmental of myself. I thought about that, and yeah, that's true. Never even criticized me. Wow. And that also, when it gets really warm inside here, basically, it's just like, ooh, and then the mind gets still all by itself. And sometimes you have these moments where you just get skillful, you find something really skillful to think about. But everybody is a bit different. So know your own mind, know what is good for you. Whatever that is, some people, they can get into tears bowing to the Buddha, or they go on to these Indian pilgrimages, or whatever, and they see of some of the places, or, I mean, if you're not so, I don't know, I mean, they are from a Christian background, there can be also, for me, some Christian images with Jesus, or whatever, which can be in the prayers on the mountain, or whatnot, you know, there's some stuff in there, sometimes I can just bring up tears in me. It's just so beautiful, and so non-judgmental, actually, just, wow, it's great. Doesn't need to be only Buddhism, can be all sorts of things, actually, which whatever causes any positive mind state. But this is stuff you do basically when your mind is a bit more settled already. You cannot do that sort of stuff actually when you have anger already inside of yourself. That won't work. The mind wants to go to that anger then. We want to be angry in that moment. Cannot let go of it. And if I try to substitute it then with something positive, basically, it's just blah, 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 blah. If I don't want anybody trampled upon me, or what, I'm not just gonna let go of that stuff. I mean, no way, you know. That guy's just crazy. And the mind goes on and on and on like that. It's just like, okay, Chitta, don't try to do that now. Basically, that doesn't work. And so basically, usually I try to either see the negative consequences that work sometimes. If I go on with that stuff now, that is just leading to nothing. It feels really unpleasant as well. If that doesn't work, I distract myself. It hardly ever comes to clenching my teeth, actually, and whatnot. Doesn't get so bad usually, but in the world can happen. You know, in the monastery it's a bit more harmonious, but in the world you have all sorts of people who can really give you a hard time. So one needs to develop this positive attitude in the moment when one is a bit, little bit more still, that the mind has something to fall back on when it's getting difficult. And that's what the training is all about. And with that sort of training, basically, what happens is the tendencies, I don't know how much you know about that, how much Ashram Brahm talked about it, which is another really nice other subject, which I cannot go into today. That thing which Christians call the soul, or in Buddhism, the citta, this vijnana, this complex of intertwined tendencies, this wanting and not wanting, and the delusion, basically, of not seeing that exactly as a problem, all are wants and not wants. That is that could be a very nice subject for another day, basically, to illuminate a little bit more. Because what the positive thoughts do is basically lightening this fetters of the mind, this stuff which constricts, which put that shadow over the more beautiful aspect of the minds. And when that shadow lifts a little bit, then basically the beautiful things you don't need so much from the outside anymore, because you have your refuge in yourself already. It's getting just a bit lighter inside of yourself, a bit lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. And the less you need, the more free you feel. It's just that beautiful thing that you just look a few years back on and you see, I don't need so much anymore. Wow. Still have a certain degree of happiness with much less dependence on outside sources. And that encourages you to go even a step further and further and further. And that's also how you can see that the path is working and you're making progress on that path. Any more questions? Okay, then we might finish now, because I have to run to get Tanjalat from the airport, otherwise he has to wait so long. He arrives at 4:20 already. And so I hope I will just be there when he comes out of the customs. Okay.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi svākato bhagavatā dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi supatipanno bhagavato savaka santo Sankang Namami.